You're listening to A Piece of Destiny podcast, a place where we talk about our passions and life experiences, from the unforgettable to the simple and everything in between. A platform to spotlight creatives, entrepreneurs, and extraordinary everyday people. I'm your host, Destiny Oliver. Enjoy the show. Hello, beautiful humans. Welcome back to another episode of A Piece of Destiny. How are you doing on this Thursday? I hope you're doing well. It's been a minute since I've said that because I only gave you one episode for the entire month of June, and I apologize. I hope you can forgive me. To say that I was busy would be an understatement. I was working hard because I work a full-time job. This is not my full-time job. And I had to go out of town for work. And then last week, I just spent the week kind of recuperating from all the things that happened in June. But we're back this week, and I'm excited to jump back into this season and continue having amazing conversations because we're not done with this season. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. So I want to introduce you to our guests and then jump into our episode. On today's episode, we're going to be talking to Bria Janae. She is a Houston native and a lover of all things creative because she is a dancer, choreographer, stretch coach, brand coordinator, and graphic designer. Translation, she does it all. Bria is an advocate for self-exploration and discovery through all things surrounding wellness. Bria urges people to use their talents to not only help others and spread light, but to also help themselves heal from past traumas. In this episode, we're continuing our conversation about self-love and self-discovery that we really didn't get to dive into in June. And you'll hear in me and Bria's conversations that she is honest about her life, victories, and failures in the hopes to empower others to find their purpose and passions throughout all stages of their life. Because we really dive into kind of the self-discovery journey from college and sometimes your post-graduation depression through figuring out your career path and whether you want to go into motherhood and generational traumas. We really dive into a lot of aspects that really can affect how you see yourself and how you take care of yourself and how you're self-aware. So it's a good episode. It's a long one, but it's good. Break it up, listen to different parts. And I just really hope you enjoy this conversation. So let's jump into the conversation with Bria.
Hey, Bri, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you on this Sunday morning?
I am good. I can't believe the weekend is already like leaving it.
You know, I got a project I got to work on today, so my weekend's pretty much gone.
Okay, yeah, I do too. I have a couple projects, and I'm just like, Lord, okay, we go back to work tomorrow. This is what happens. This is what we do.
Adulting.
That is exactly what it is. Before we get into our topic, because I'm so excited to speak with you today, like, oh my gosh, I want you to just tell people a little bit about you.
So I am Bria Janae. I go by Bria. Whichever, it doesn't really matter. I'm actually Bria Janae on Instagram, Twitter. I'm a creative dancer, choreographer. I'm actually a brand coordinator. That's like my full-time position. So I'm all around. My job is to be organized, to be creative, and help people execute their visions while also like executing my own. So this summer I told myself I'll do a lot of like side projects, which means I'll be very busy this summer, but I'm excited.
Yes. That's so exciting. And so I didn't say this, but Bria dates my cousin. And so that's how we got connected. They are the cutest couple. I love them. And it just brings me joy. So check out our Instagram. You'll see him on there. We love Black love. So to start off the conversation, Bria, in May of 2020, self-care was the most searched phrase on Google, which of course we were in the middle of a quarantine shutdown pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And probably because most people were overwhelmed and like trying to figure out how do I deal with all of this stress and uncertainty. And so fun fact of the day though, self-care isn't new. You know, it's become kind of that buzzword recently over the last couple of years that everybody wants to latch on to, right? And push, especially the beauty industry. They're pushing like self-care. But we're gonna get into that. It isn't new. The ancient Greeks saw it as a way to make people more honest who were more likely to care for others. In 1989 book, A Burst of Light, Audre Lorde wrote that caring for self is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political war. And I was like, oh, I like that. The self-preservation part of the quote sticks out to me, because I think that's the case with a lot of people when it comes to self-love, but also the discovery of oneself, because we all have a lot of traumas that we don't deal with, big T's, little T's, generational things that affect how we see and view ourselves, right?
Right, absolutely. Like, the trauma part is, though, I don't think you can really like actually love yourself until you allow yourself to deal with the traumas. Mm-hmm. Because once you've dealt with, like, dealing with your traumas is really having to look in the mirror and say, like, okay, this happened to me, but this isn't who I am.
Right.
And also, it's one of those things to where, like, you really don't fully know who you are until you've worked through the trauma. Yeah. Because a lot of, I think, I can't remember where I read this at, but basically a lot of people stop growing where they experience certain traumas in life. So you have people who are 40, 50 years old who are still, like, psychologically 8.
Yeah.
And it's like, until you move past those points, you aren't able to understand, you aren't able to grow, you aren't able to adapt, and you aren't able to really, like, see what life is. Mm-hmm. Until you really, like, dig deep and deal with those traumas. And whether it be, like, a trauma that happened to you physically, a trauma that you witnessed, a trauma that's a generational trauma. Like, there's so many different types of trauma. And I think trauma is a buzzword now, too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, trauma, you know, like, that we don't really, like, fully understand. It's all-encompassing of kind of who you are and what makes you. Because you will always somewhat react from where your traumas are, even after you go through them. But the point is getting to the point to where you can acknowledge that you're acting due to those things.
Yeah. So that leads me to my first question. What has your self-love and self-discovery journey looked like?
So mine's a little bit more, that's a question. Okay. So I grew up very tomboyish. I grew up very, I grew up tomboyish and low income. So I feel like that played a lot into kind of how I saw myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go to school, and at first I'm a tomboy, so I'm dressing a certain way and people perceive you a certain way, especially when you're a girl who dresses more masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was masculine. I was just like, I liked sports. I played basketball. I ran track. I did all these very like, what Dean, like, I didn't want to be the cheerleader. I wanted to be the one getting cheered for. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know it's kind of thing, but that's who I was.
Hey, listen.
I switched to dancing in high school and it changed my life. I was one of those, like, I grew up in a very Black household to where I didn't have a voice. Like, you kind of dealt with what happened to you and you didn't talk about what was going on in your household. And I had a lot of traumatizing things happening within my household. But and I was just very good at having a straight face. I had a dance, my dance director, she would like fuss. Like, I remember one time we went to Disney this is all gonna come together. I had like my toes out, but I didn't have nail polish on. She was like, don't ever let me see you. You see your toes again without nail polish, me and like feet. And I was like, ew.
Like, what?
I was more afraid of the punishment I would get from not wearing toenail polish than I was. So at that point I did. And it was like things that I can, that's how I started wearing makeup. It's just certain things that allowed me to start peeking into my femininity.
Mm-hmm.
And with dance allowed me to express certain things that I didn't have words for.
Yeah.
So I went through high school, like, and when I started, I was absolute garbage. To go from playing basketball to go to, you use your body in a completely different way. I was so bad. And I acknowledge, like, I was bad. By the end of high school, I was an officer. Like, I could do all these tricks and these different things, but it was one of those things, like, I truly, like, believed in myself. I was like, I can get this. I just don't have it now.
Yeah.
And she used to say, like, can't never could. We don't say can't here. Mm-hmm. Because once you tell yourself you can't do something, your brain shuts down.
Yeah.
And then you aren't able. And I think that's a concept that I have followed throughout my life. On top of the fact of one of her phrases was, be the example, not the exception. So there are going to be times in life where you are allowed certain privileges because you have a certain access to certain things, mm-hmm. but you don't use that as a chance to like be lazy or be mediocre or allow yourself to just get by. It's those times where you really dig deep and you're like, okay, I can do this, but my character says that I don't. And I push through and I be the example of what this should look like.
Yeah.
And I followed a lot of that throughout life. So even when I didn't understand why certain things were happening, I was like, can't, never could, be the example, not the exception. And at almost 28, I can acknowledge she put a foundation into my self-love and my self-care journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was one of those to where I went through, like, I was very, you know, I had a six pack and I had muscles and I was deemed as more masculine and, you know, people like she's a man, and it hurts your self-confidence,
yeah,
for being wrong and looking a certain way. So I got to college and I was just like, I'm a dancer, but I don't want to look like that, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I really fought to, like, I just wouldn't work out certain ways. Like, I wasn't going to the gym, but then I started gaining weight.
I can relate. And, yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm having this eternal fight because I don't want to look manly, but I also don't want to gain this weight. And as a dancer, like,
yes, that is a battle. Uh huh.
You can tell, like, this leap ain't leaping the way it used to. And I had the biggest fight. Mm-hmm. And I was also going through a relationship. I more or less dealt with a particular person from the time I was 14 to the time I was 24. Wow. And we went back and forth, like, over and over again. I had other boyfriends and stuff in the meantime, but it was like a constant. He was very, like, he was so full of love and so full of light, but also so full of darkness. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it was just like a battle going back and forth. So I think that also kind of, it helped me in a sense of where, like, when I dealt with other people, I was very just kind of like, I was very like hesitant when it came to dudes, because I was just like, I know what love looks like and love doesn't look like this, you know, because even though he had darkness, he was love, you know, he 100% was love. But again, he had his own darknesses. So I was just always very cautious when dealing with guys. And then I got to college in my sophomore year. So this is like, I'm about to get like real personal. I was like a virgin. I hadn't smoked. I hadn't drank. I hadn't done anything. Mm-hmm. I was like 19 and I was just like, I want to try things, you know. I haven't mm-hmm. done things. I've pretty much been a square, which isn't a bad thing, of course,
right?
But I haven't done anything. So I did all those things. I partied, I drank.
Uh-huh.
Somehow I still managed to be on president's list. I don't know how I did that, but you know, girl,
grace.
All in one. And I went through, I ended up like not dealing with the guy, and then I ended up dealing with him again. I went home, had a pregnancy scare, mm-hmm. and I was like, this isn't it. Like, this, like, I need to live my best life, but like smarter.
Yes.
And I went back to school depressed. I think the people who were closest to me saw it, but they didn't like put words to it. And I think because I'm always deemed as such a strong person, people don't see my depressions as depressions. They see it as like a bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was depressed. And that was, I'm actually like, most people, I guess because when you're Black and you're from Texas and you're Southern, they deem you as being like Christian. At that time, I was. I'm currently not. I like denounce Christianity. I went through this whole phase to where I was just like, I am going to let go of everything. I let go of the guy. I let go of my religion. I let go of everything that I had put on myself. I actually partially didn't talk to my family. I didn't talk to my mom. We've had a very interesting relationship growing up. And I just kind of let go of all the things that had been put on me as far as who I was, right?
Mm-hmm.
For about 2 years, I don't think I've done so much reading and research and just understanding. I started meditating. I started doing all these things that I had. I was taking yoga. Like, I had did all these different things that I changed my eating. So I went pescatarian, and then at some point I was vegetarian. You know, I did all these different things that were just like, these aren't what people, and like, this isn't what people should say that I should be, but this is what feels right and this is what feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And I started researching my Blackness, because I am an American Black person. And I think a part of like, when you don't know your history, you don't know where you're going. And I think so much of rooted about generational trauma is that fear to go back and look. Like, I know I come from slaves, you know, like, mm-hmm. and instead, like, well, and you can see the trauma, and during that time, I'm able to acknowledge like the trauma that went throughout my family.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm starting to see things because I've like took off like the what is it, the red lenses, the
colored glasses.
Off, and I'm like seeing all these things, and I'm putting words to them now because I have words to use.
Yeah.
And I started getting all this flack back because for once somebody told the truth. And I think that's the thing that I took from that time period in my life, is like, you don't like, my mom used to be like, you don't have to like the truth, but you have to respect it. And I think that's the thing, is I started to walk in my truth.
Yeah.
And my self-love journey became, mm-hmm. because whether you like it, don't like it, disagree, like my decisions, it's my truth.
Yep.
Nobody can take your truth from you.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, I was in a bad place. And I can acknowledge, that was depression. That's what depression looks like.
You know,
for me. Like, that was not a good time. But that was my truth during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what really helped push it is my junior year. I can't remember, either my junior year or my senior year, I had a huge anxiety attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm done. I can't do this. And I went and I signed myself up for therapy that day. And I went in and I talked and I cried and I started pouring everything out because I'd always been taught to be strong, that I never had like allowed myself to, because I saw being vulnerable and talking about things as a weakness.
Yeah.
And I started divulging everything.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, me and Sandra had a good old time for about 2 years of me in there just telling her all about my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I see like that's where self-love for me changed, because it went in everything that has happened to me to like how I step into who I want to be.
Yeah.
And I started decisions based off, I don't care what y'all think. this is my truth. Yeah. And like 100%, and I know this has been a very long way to answer.
It's fine.
Self-love is a process. This is a journey.
Yeah.
Even that was like, I was like 22 at that time and I'm 28, and self-love looks different now than it did then. But the one thing that I can 100% say that I have found true for me is that I stand in my truth no matter what.
Yeah. And I love that you said you did what you had to do for yourself, regardless of what everyone had to say. I feel like a lot of times, I think especially as millennials, which that's going to lead me to my next question, our parents have shaped and molded us into like, which is not always a bad thing in some parental relationships, but they do what they need to do to make sacrifices to make sure we have a better life sometimes than they had, or they're making sacrifices just to make sure we're staying afloat because, you know, we're staying afloat, doggy paddle. But sometimes when they do that, they're living vicariously through us, and sometimes we don't realize it until we're 22, 24. And it's like, wait a minute, I haven't been living for me.
Yep.
I haven't been doing what I want to do, how I want to do it. And not always. And I feel like sometimes when we want to do stuff, parents, society, other people, they're like, oh no, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. And it's like, I'm not harming anybody. This has no effect on you. And I'm actually truly happy.
And it's like, if I fail, I fail.
Yes!
Like, I'm failing.
No, it's like, let me take this L. It's like, if it's L, I'm going to take it. Let me just take it. Listen, we all have to go through the stages, and it may not look how yours looked, and that's okay. But this is my journey, and it's a continual journey that we're constantly on. Because you said at 22, self-love and self-care didn't look how it looks at 28.
Not at all.
That was a lot of good nuggets. I hope y'all picked some of that up, wrote it down. So leading into my next question, and I kind of talked about this on episode 10 with my best friend, how, you know, millennials, we get all of the labels.
All of them.
Even though the people giving us the labels raised us. But anywho, they have called us the me generation. I skimmed an article that was titled, "Too Much Self-Esteem May Be Keeping Millennials Single." I was like, what?
I've heard that too. That's a whole nother conversation.
That's a whole nother conversation that we could just jump on and sit there, but we're not going to. And then in 2015, according to a Pew Research article, more millennials reported making personal improvement commitments than any generation before. We have spent twice as much as boomers on self-care essentials such as workout regimens, diet plans, life coach, therapy, and apps to improve our personal well-being, which I think is fabulous. So with my next question, do you think we as a generation are all consumed with self? Or were some of us blessed, like I said earlier, to have parents who made sacrifices, or others forced to adapt? And or are some of us just determined not to continue the cycle of suffering while taking care of our whole family or our siblings or whatever it may be that's on our shoulders? I love your questions.
I feel like it's some of all of it and then none of it at the same
time. Yeah, agreed.
Because I feel like, so with me, everybody in my family had children really young. Like, my grandmother had my mom when she was 16. My mom had me when she was 17. And like, I'm observant. So I knew, okay, first of all, I'm not having no babies in high school. That's not happening. You know, and I had, like, by 25, I want to look like this, right? I want my life like this. That's just, but by 25, I wanted my life to look a particular way. But I watch, and I love my grandmother. I call her my Nana. So I love my Nana. My Nana is one of the strongest, most beautiful women I have ever met in my life. And there are things about her that I 100% aim to be like. She's one of the most loving, caring people I know. She will give you the shirt off her back. Mm-hmm. But because of that, she has taken on so much that was not hers to take on.
Yeah.
And sitting and talking with it, she can acknowledge it and I can see it.
Yeah.
And it's to where she's only 60 and she hasn't lived. Mm-hmm. And I just promised myself that, like, I didn't want to be that person, you know? And I think as a generation, we were fed a lie. We were fed, if you go to school, if you do this, if you do this this way, then life will be like this.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I have learned about life is life does not have a look. Mm-mm. And life, and you can say, like, it doesn't have a look, and life is not fair, because I feel like there are people who are out there like making money, mm-hmm. and they're horrible people, you know, like, it's like, if there's no balance to it. It's like you have to take what you got and learn to play the game, because it is a game that you have to play in order to reach a certain stat. Mm-hmm. I also had to realize that success looks different for different people.
Yes.
You know, and again, these are things I'm learning from my family. Like, I don't deem this person as successful, but they have a family, so they deem themselves as successful. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, really, again, in living in my truth, look at it and see, okay, what does success look like? What does this look like? And I think a lot of us, and I'm gonna say especially like Black women, we look at our ancestors and we say, okay, I love this, but this is not okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like women should talk to women more, but I feel like women have started that process of talking to women more. Mm-hmm. And you hear so much of like, I put up with this because I had, or I did this because I did this. And first, a lot of us are looking like, okay, first I went to school. So when you go to school, that typically delayed, like statistically, that delays you starting a family. Mm-hmm. So that put us a little bit back behind. And then you get out of school at 22 and you're scratching your head because you're like, I told myself I was going to have this house and this car. And
about 25. I gotta find a job.
What I wanna do. But then you deal with postgraduate depression and nobody talks about
not that. Nope.
They don't talk about that.
Oh no.
And then it's like, okay, you're in this relationship and the person you was at 18 or the person you was at 20 and the person you are at 25 aren't the same. Like, y'all don't match. So then you break up. You know, it's like all these different things in life. And I think millennials have looked, and not only that, millennials, we are the generation that has a true understanding. And I tell myself that all the time because I have a cousin who is 15 and she's so much like me, but so different. Mm-hmm. And I know things about her, but I am terrified for other things about for her. Because we are that generation that still has that understanding of the older generation, but also understand this new generation. And we're like the combination of the two.
Yeah.
So understand, like, you do have to play the game to a certain part, but also, I'm not going to work this job for 40 years when I know, like, you're only going to raise my pay by $1 a year, maybe.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. Especially, and I think with social media, gives us access to all these different things. I said one of the things, taking it back to Black people, is like a lot of Black kids don't do certain jobs because we don't have access to them. We don't even know they exist.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, media has allowed us to see, like, this whole other world exists that we didn't necessarily know existed, because, you know, like, you're used to your certain norms of your particular town or your city or your environment, your high school, like, your community, and you're like, people living like, okay, how do I get that?
Yeah.
And I think our parents are afraid because we are, like, we are the adults now. You know, we are the young generation of adults. And they're afraid because they're like, well, wait, life isn't supposed to look like that. But we're also like, life does not look what it looked like 20 years ago.
It does not. Yeah.
It doesn't. Like, you could go to school and have a bachelor's degree and be okay. Now it's like a bachelor's degree is like bare minimum.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you had computer skills 10 years ago, that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's expected to know how to open, like, how to do certain stuff.
Yeah.
So because technology is advanced, it's making us have to advance fast as a generation. Mm-hmm. And like, it's like stuff like before when I was in college, I remember like on Facebook, and I was like, they need like three-way text. We didn't have group texting yet.
Right.
And now that's like,
right. Yep.
You know, like, that's bare minimum of a phone. Mm-hmm. So our generation is a combination of a lot of like truths and a lot of like lies, and we're able to see those things. Like, even with the protesting stuff that happened last year, like, protesting wouldn't look the way it looked now. Like, like, what's being a radical or being like, you know, like, Black Lives Matter would not look the way it looked if we had not had social media and we weren't there telling the truth about what's really going on, and not what, you know, like, even our parents were lied to. For generations, people being lied to and being, and now we're like, nope, that's not right.
Right.
No, that's not right. Actually, that story came out.
I can't debunk that. Right.
You know, like, and we're able to be honest. And I think we're a very, like, honest generation. Do I think that we're narcissistic? I think we have to be really careful with using that word, because that is a psychological word. Mm-hmm. And start to dilute words or use words excessively, you start to get to the point to where they don't have, like, words matter. And people can say they don't, but words matter.
They do.
I think we're narcissistic. I think, like, we take pride in understanding, I don't want to be miserable for the next 60 years.
Yes, ma'am. I'm glad you said that. Mm-hmm.
And like, so what does that look like? You know, like, I don't want to be miserable. I see, like, we can all, and like, most of us can look at our parents, our grandparents, and see some kind of misery that they've gone through. It's like, okay, well, how do I fix that? Yeah. How do I look at that? And like, LeBron James spends like $1 million a year or something like that on his body, because that's his temple, right? Right. But our bodies are like, we use our bodies every day. Like, no matter what you're doing, you know, I'm like big on like fitness and like wellness as a whole. You use your body every day. Like, I don't care what, you can go through phones, you can go through your body, you will be in, and you need to be happy with, and like, not even happy, because I don't like using that term. You need to be at peace with who you are, what you are, what you is, because regardless, that's going to stem in how you project and how you see the world and how you see people around you. Like, we are a generation of like, self-care matters because other generations didn't do it. And we see the trauma that they have put on us. And people don't realize that generational trauma is generational. So it builds. So yeah. If you do not, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
So a lot of us are like, okay. And we have a privilege, and it's a privilege. And it is. In my last look about this. It's a privilege.
It is.
I can look at my brother. And like they've had to make about like, I know my nana, a history of my family. My grandmother was married. My grandfather ended up being on drugs. So she had to make the decision to like, I'm going to take my babies and do what's best for us. Mm-hmm. And because of that, again, my nana's one of the strongest women I've ever met in my life. She took that and she's made a life from her trauma of having to deal with that.
Yeah,
I know a lot of women stay, and it's like you can't tell a woman which way, you know, like what's always the best situation. But my nana struggled because of certain decisions she made. But in looking at it, I think it was the best decision that she made.
Yeah, but it affected. It played a.
But it had an effect.
Yeah,
and it had an effect on my mother, mm-hmm. and it had an effect on how she sees things. And so in dealing with her, like my mom had me young, so I grew up with my mother. So yeah. I'm. Like these generationist maternal like trauma, mm-hmm. and then you get older and they start telling you all these family secrets and these truths, and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
And I had to come to a point to where like I have a privilege of being able to say okay, and a part of it's because of decisions I made. Like, had I had a baby young, I wouldn't have certain privileges. Yeah. So but because I've started to decided to live my life a certain way, I have privileges to live.
Yeah. And ooh, that's good, Brie.
Mm-hmm. I have healed. And when you're stuck, like, I can see, like, up until I just visited my family after, like, COVID and stuff, and it was one of the, like, most refreshing, but most, like, it was, like, it took me about a week to process it. I can see healing in my family now, mm-hmm. that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's, like, once we've all gotten to a point to where we're, like, okay, we're tired of just surviving. How do I live? And when you get to that place where you're like, okay, I want to live. I'm tired of this pain. I'm tired of these things. You start that self-care. You start that self-love. And I think a lot of us millennials are just looking and we're like, I don't want that hurt. I no longer want to carry this hurt. It's not even my own.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are like, you can say like, oh, yeah, we take a lot of pictures of ourselves. But like, we are spiritual beings in its physical form. You should like what your physical form looks like. And people like will fight you on that. But you can't be happy and you look in the mirror every day and you hate what you see.
Right. Yep.
So I think it's an all encompassing. So it's like, okay, I take this selfie because I look cute. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's wrong with me being like, I look really pretty today.
I did that. Yep.
You know, like I
picked myself up.
I took this bath. I took care of myself and I could see my own glow because you know what? Because I worked for this glow.
Yes.
And people don't want to see like the narcissistic part of it, but it's a lot that goes into like glowing and feeling good and living life, especially with, again, with social media, we get flooded with good, but we also get flooded with a lot of bad. So it's just knowing when to turn it off. But it's also like, I think as a generation, because we are doing so much self-care and self-love, that's starting to reflect. And yeah. I feel like moving into a more understanding society, even though people deem us as being soft. And I think it's like, those certain things were never okay, and we're acknowledging those things that weren't okay, because you can be funny and you can like tell jokes and you can do all this stuff without hurting people.
Yep.
So I think as a generation, you know, there are, and of course every generation is going to progress and every generation is going to have their things, but I don't think we're narcissists. I think we are understanding that you can't keep moving forward with certain traumas and certain pains and then think everything's going to be okay, because it's not okay.
Yep, not at all. That is... Yeah, see y'all, I was telling you I was so excited about this episode because the girl is filled with all the goodness. So you talked about bodies and our physical forms. So we both work out 3 to 5 times a week. And I think I have said it on this podcast before or my Instagram. I don't work out because I just like fully enjoy it. I'm not that person, to be very honest with you. that's just, you know, I do it because I know my family health history and prevention is better than treatment. That is my whole process and the life that I want to live. as I get older. If it's a lifestyle now, it'll be a lifestyle as I get older. Yep. So with that, we check in with each other on social media. We take pics. If you don't take a pic, then the workout didn't happen. It didn't happen, you know? And speaking of our physical bodies, self-care activist Sonya Ray Taylor, she said, ultimately, our struggles against oppression, oppressive social constructs start with our relationships, politically, socially, and interpersonally with other people's bodies. But it starts with us as individuals, with our relationship with our own bodies. Inevitably, as Black women, the personal and political cannot be separated. By grounding our activism in our own radical, unconditional love, we can dismantle the master's tools and disrupt the system of power that rely on our self-deprecation. When I read that, I was like, come on.
That's a whole word, right?
And so my question to you is, do you think there's some truth to this? I'm going to just go ahead and say yes, but I know you're going to have more to follow up with. And you kind of touched on my second part to this question is, do you think it's harder for some Black women to put themselves first?
So to answer the first part of your question, absolutely. Yes, because you don't. So I started dancing, right? And I kind of touched on it earlier to where I was like, I've always been extremely muscular. I was one of those people who gained the quarantine weight and not been struggling with it and trying to get it off.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Those who I gained muscle fast. So, you know, my muscle builds faster than the fat loses. So then if I'm too heavy,
working out. Yes. Lose it where you want to lose it.
It's not giving me what I wanted to give, yeah.
Right?
And especially as a dancer, it's something that's always like on the forefront of your mind. Like, I need to look a certain way. I need that certain alignment. If it's thick, then it's cutting off my line.
Yep.
So, like, I think I started working out. I didn't work out, and then I started gaining weight. So I started working out as a way to, like, lose weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think when working out to lose weight is your function, you will not keep the weight off.
Yep.
And it creates bad habits around food. Mm-hmm. And because I grew up low income, sometimes we just didn't have, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the things I've told myself as an adult is that I will always be able to eat. Like, I will do whatever it takes, but I'm never going to go hungry ever again in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that created a bad habit with food. So people don't think, they think fitness and you think your body, it's not just what you do outwardly. It's also what you're putting into it. And, you know, like, what putting into it isn't just food. It's what you watch. It's everything that you consume on a regular day basis. And as Black women, I think a big issue is that we are sexualized even as children. I remember being 14 years old and a man who was obviously in his 60s trying to hit on me.
Yeah.
Like, things like that. And you're like, I know I look like a child.
Like, what are you doing, sir?
Like, all these curves I have now, I did not have these curves. And mm-hmm. I was like, I know. I don't look grown.
Right.
And so, depending on how fast you develop or how fast you don't develop, because there's an opposite side to that, too.
Yeah.
Being a Black girl and being confident in your body, like, if you don't got boobs and you don't got butt, yeah. You're like, a girl with curves, and I was small. So, like, people looking at you like, well, you don't got body, yada yada, and I'm like, I'm 16,
right? What are we,
what body am I supposed to have,
right?
So it's like, it's as a, and in the Black community, you know, as soon as you start gaining some weight, I had my granny, girl, you getting fat, girl, why is it the first thing
you say when I walk in the room,
thanks, you know? Right. And it's like, it starts to build all these very negative things around our bodies and how we perceive. Like, I have I wrote a blog like 2 years ago about like the good girl versus the whole complex,
mm-hmm.
and how it like puts a stigma on what we are supposed to be as women, especially yeah. as Black women. Like, you don't get to venture out about certain parts of your body, and what people want to acknowledge it or not. Somebody else touching your body and like these sexual things do dictate how you see yourself. It dictates how you how do you define yourself? What does your femininity look like? What does your sexuality look like? And it's all these different things that as Black women, we don't always get the privilege of experiencing and even like really just dabbling in, you know, like, and it's a spectrum. So, you know, some people are out there doing what they're doing, and some people are like, I'll do the bare minimum, and that's what feels good.
Yeah.
And when we bring it back to fitness, it's like, but why are you doing this? And like you said, like with my family, like diabetes, mm-hmm. heart, like it's like so many, like obesity and never the fat shame. But, you know, like as you gain a certain amount of weight, it does start to put, like it does start to hurt certain organs and like different things in your body. It's just, it's science, you know? And I don't believe that all of us are supposed to be a certain same size, but I do think that all of us are supposed to participate in a certain amount of fitness.
Yep.
On top of this creative, I'm also a stretch coach. And I have a lot of older clients come in, but I also have a lot of clients who are like 35, 40. And can't touch their toes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have any hip of mobility. And people like, oh, well, I need to stretch because I want to be flexible. No, you need to stretch because you need to be mobile. You need to be able to get out the car. Like, these big things where we don't think about because we sit all the time and we're doing these things. And as a Black woman, you know, like you said, like the physical and the political, like it's all like all over like who we are. We do not get that privilege to separate them because it's like, when you see me, you're going to see me in a certain way, right? So like, if like I have on a long sleeve right now, but if I had on a tank top, I would be perceived different, you know. I've been like perceived as being like way more sexual than I actually really am as a person,
because
my body is presented a certain way and I look a certain way, or because I dance and I'm, you know, I wear a leotard, and like you get these certain perceptions of what your body is. And so again, sticking with the fitness, like I was always like, I don't necessarily always work out because I want to,
right?
60% of the time I'm doing it because I know like my body needs this. Like I need a certain type of food and I need water. It needs to run. It needs to do these things.
Yep.
And I think that we have to do a better job at looking at the reason as to why we're doing these things rather than just to like be a certain size, as you know, especially women in the Black community. And then just eating better, I think, because we, you know, I'm from Texas, Houston, we try and smother and because I grew up like that. I went to a school in Miami and I didn't realize like some of the stuff, how bad it was for my body. And at 18, it's fine.
Yeah.
At 20, it's not, you know, like
metabolism's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like not the same thing. You know, like fast food, tacos 5 times a week. Like it doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a community, we have to do a better job at like looking at ourselves and the type, like I said, and like the type of lives we want. And a part of that is health.
Yeah.
And wellness being your physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial wellness. And like, make sure it's all encompassing. So loving your outer, loving your inner, making sure your finances are in order. It's a all, like all over thing that we just have to do a better job at looking at and not deeming it for like, you know, so I feel like sometimes it's like, so that we'll be accepted by white people. It has nothing to do with them. How do we get, how do we support each other? Going to the gym isn't for everybody. Go take a booty bump class. Go take like
go walk.
Yeah. Exactly. Yoga. Do whatever feels right. Just make sure you're doing some cardio, some weights, and some kind of stretching, some kind of something. Have it all as part of your regimen, and keep going, because it's gonna look different for everybody.
Yeah.
Your second question was, do Black women,
you kind of touched on it, why do you think it's harder for some Black women to put themselves first?
I think it's harder too because we're taught not to.
Yeah.
And we're taught to like, and I say this, and I've gone, not only just Black women, but as women as a whole, women are taught to be mothers from childhood.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Whereas men are not taught to necessarily be fathers and husbands from childhood. But like, if you think about the type of toys that are like girl toys, they're, you know, so you'd be a good mommy, and it's a kitchen set so you can cook. Like it's these very like, those are basic things that everybody but we're like trained. And then even in the Black household, like statistically, it's a matriarchy, you know. It's statistically, it's the Black woman, a single Black mother in the household, right? And because of that, we're having to, like, at that point, when you have children, you have no choice but to put those children first, right? Because you have to survive, you have to do these things. And I think, and I've watched, and it's a very interesting, because we talked about the millennial thing earlier, is I've watched some of my millennial friends who we have very similar views, and I'm going to say this, and it's going to be, I hope people don't take it out of context, fall into that trap of you're a mother and a wife first.
Yeah.
You talk to them, they are depressed and hate their lives.
We talk on my Mother's Day episode. I don't know if it's episode 6 or 7. I had 2 mothers on. One was a stay-at-home mom, one was a working mom. And we talked about that, how, yes, having children and giving life is a beautiful thing. But one of the guests, I think Dara Ivory, said it. She was like, I'm not always going to be a mom. Like, my kid, like, I'm a mom, but I'm not a mom all the time. Like, I'm also a person who loves to do this and this and this. And once your baby is gone, then you're like, so now you've given all of yourself to your kids and they have to grow and become the people they are. And then you're just like, well, I don't know who I am anymore. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women go through that. Like, and they're like, especially if they have kids like younger. Okay. So in their 40s, they'll start going, like, my mother's going through this. Mm-hmm. My mom, my brother, he won. So he moved out a couple years ago. My mom was like, this is the first time I've lived by myself since, you know, like ever. Uh-huh. Because she had me young. So she went from my mother's house to her own house. But I was already there.
Yeah.
So she was like, I've never experienced this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm like 22, whatever. I've lived by myself. So I'm like, yeah.
Right, this is great.
You know, she's like, but I've never done this.
Yeah.
And it was an experience for her. Mm-hmm. And I had to like walk my mom through like, being like living by yourself.
Yeah, enjoying her own company.
Yeah, enjoying your own company. And I think so many women are just, it's just ingrained that you're a mother and your job is to procreate and to create his legacy, not your own legacy. It's your job is to create his legacy. And yeah. It's okay, but what about me? And I think like it's so hard for us to put ourselves first a lot of times because, like you said, it's seen as being selfish. And it's not selfishness, it's self-preservation, because you can't keep filling everybody else's cup if yours is empty. Like, you run on E and you're like, okay, I gotta do this, I gotta take him to soccer practice, and I gotta do this, and I gotta do this, and it's like, okay, I need to sit down and take a nap. I need to sit down and take a bubble bath. I need to go put my kid in daycare for 2 hours just so I can clean the house by myself. You know, like, it's these things where, like, I advocate for my friends, like, if you can afford to get a nanny, get a nanny.
Get it out. Like,
motherhood and being a wife has looked like, especially for Black women, looks like struggling. Like, when you think of like a white woman being at home and being like this, like being this character, you think like a nanny and she lives in this really nice house, and then you think about a Black woman, it's not the same. You don't get that same look.
Yeah.
And we can, and it's like out racism and social injustice and all that stuff, and it is, but it's like, okay, well, we see it, how do we fix it?
Yeah.
Like, how look like this?
Yep.
And I've told Hobby, like, we, you know, we've talked about marriage and kids and all that stuff, is I have a kid, I want a nanny. I'm not doing, like, motherhood does not look like solitude and me just having to get through this about, like, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it takes a certain amount of strength to say that, because yeah, you have outside forces
who are like, oh, no, you can do it, you can do it yourself, and you should be able to raise your, and it's like, mm-mm.
No, but it takes a community. Like yeah. it's funny how like certain things are said, but then they're not like deemed at the same time.
Yeah.
It takes to raise a child. But then, okay, well, I need help. Well, you should be strong enough to do this by yourself. Yeah. No! Yeah. So I think, like I said, I think a lot of times it's hard for Black people to put themselves first, because again, we haven't necessarily had that privilege of doing so. But also because society has told us that it's wrong, and we're having to like break that mold of what that looks like and what motherhood and black motherhood and black being a, you know, a Black wife, like, what do these things look like? What does marriage look like? What does Black love look like? And once we can start like fixing those things, I think it'll help us really put ourselves forward and be like, okay, it's me first, and then I can flow everything to everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, Bri. Yeah, because it, speaking to the motherhood portion of that part of the conversation, that ties so much into that self-discovery, because although the self part is like, oh, that's selfish, but it's like, as a mother, I have to figure out what this looks like for myself, what my motherhood is going to look like, because at the end of the day, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, working mom, single parent, you got a husband, you got a baby, whatever that looks like, that it's you and your child for 9 months. And then after that, your child most of the time is still looking at you like, okay, I know my dad or whoever else is over there, But
you, I need you.
I'm looking to ride or die with you until I'm ready to leave this nest, you know?
I tell people, like, babies are like parasites for the first couple years of their life. And people are like,
that's real. Like, no, they need you. They can't exist without you. Yeah.
And, like, since I struggled, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, after watching, like, my mom and my grandmother, like, go through being a single parent, I told myself, oh, no, there's no way I would ever do that. Like,
right.
Friends, I have friends who are single mothers, I have friends who are, like, married, I have seen friends who are, like, in long-term relationships, and they're not married yet, but they have children. Yeah. And it's like, this is gonna sound, and I had a dream, it was crazy, I had a dream like this last night about, like, I had a baby, which is, like, random dream, we're just gonna chop that off, knock on wood, whatever. but once women have babies, they get this mommy-ness about them, and I have been very honest in it, and be like, I am not ready to have that mommy-ness, because I'm still selfish, and I still want to, like, fully figure out myself a little bit more, yeah, before that mom, and you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
That. Like, it's a mommy-ness. It's like, and it's like, that's such a, like, and I can see how it's both, like, love, and moms are like, this is, like, the best and worst thing that's ever happened to me. I can see it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a, and I'm just not ready, and I'm not at that point in life yet to where I'm like, I am ready to give up, because you do, I feel like you do give up a certain part of me. I am,
yeah,
yet to give up that part of myself in order to be so selfless.
Yeah.
To take on that mommy-ness.
Yeah.
And I can, women who do it, because it is like being pregnant, giving birth, none of that looks like anything I want to do. But I also am extremely like, you did that, you know, like, I commend you, women, mothers, yeah, and I commend, like, and I think even too with the question is putting ourselves first, it's Black love, what does it look like? Because a lot of times we've seen a lot of Black women give, 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 and not receive what they're reciprocating.
Girl, yeah.
And not be given what they what they give. And so I think a lot of us are very hesitant even when it comes to that too, because like, if I'm gonna pour into you, I want to be poured into as well.
Yeah, that, all of that, all of that. And that's, and one thing that I hope as our generation kind of becomes the people who are just leading things is that as women, which we see it happening now, which I think is beautiful, but more people are okay with saying, no, I'm not ready.
I'm not okay.
I'm not ready for marriage. I'm not ready for whatever it is. And that's okay. Because as we said earlier, your life isn't going to look like my life, and my life isn't going to look like Sally Sue's life and Janet Jackson and Jeffrey. Like, it's just not. And that's okay. To live life how you want to live it and take the steps on this imaginary timeline that somebody has set up, and you move your markers where they need to be when you're ready to do those things.
And that thing too is like, in talking and looping on this conversation, like, you cannot be a good mother and you cannot be a good wife and you until you are good to yourself.
Yeah.
So like my early 20s, I spent healing.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about like me and Javi's relationship, and I laugh because everybody's like, oh my God, I love y'all so much. I'm just like, we're just two people just, you know, doing our best.
What you did? I know, yeah, I know that. Listen.
Uh-huh. But it's like one of those things too, to where like, I can acknowledge, had I not gone through certain healing, that my relationship with Hobson would not exist.
Hey.
Because I wouldn't have been able to be like the patience that it takes, basically we live together, it takes a certain amount of patience, it takes a certain amount of understanding, it takes a certain amount of truth, it takes all these things that like I did not have 5 years ago.
Right.
Like I did it. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm gonna deal with this, is a ghetto, we don't do this.
Ghetto.
When I'm like, okay, I understand the beauty in patience. I understand, mm-hmm, that being able to speak a truth, even though it's a hard truth to speak. I understand what self-love looks like. And even with that, I'm like, I still struggle because, you know, living by yourself and living with somebody, those are two different types. So still figuring out, we've been living together for like over a year now, but still like, okay, what does Bria time look like in the house while he's here? You know, like compared to pushing him out, I should have to push him out to be able to enjoy me time in the house.
Yeah.
So it's really just taking on that, and what does it look like? What does self-care and self-love look like in the realms of, okay, am I good to me? Okay, I'm good to me. Okay, now I can be a mother. And that was one of the things I was terrified about becoming a mother, because I'm able to see the trauma that has went through the matriarchy of my family. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to carry on that trauma. So I took a lot of time to heal. And because of that, I feel like if I, I'm not saying I want one right now, but if I had a baby right now, I feel like I would be a good mother compared to, and I wouldn't be living vicariously through my child. No, I would be living, like I would be creating life and speaking life into somebody else because I've chosen to allow that life to come through me rather than speaking to that thing and expecting that thing to look a certain way because I have not yet healed things within myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was good. And we can stay there, but I'm moving to our last question. Gotcha. I love talking to Bree, and we'll just keep talking.
We will.
And we got to go. Okay, so my last question. We're transitioning into my last question is a quote because I love quotes. Self-care alone is not enough. You need to have self-awareness too. Self-care plus self-awareness equals self-love. And that is by Gracie. She is the host of the Beautiful Life Self-Care podcast. You should check it out. It's a really good podcast. But how do you find a balance between self-care and self-awareness? Because I know with myself, sometimes you're like, oh yeah, I'm taking care of me. Hair done, nails did, eyebrows did, waxed, shaved, exfoliated, yes, but I'm also ignoring the deep-rooted issue within. Or I can be very self-aware, and sometimes your self-awareness and some is self-deprecation. You're like, oh, I should have did this differently. Oh, I should have did this, and oh, I should have said this and that. So how do you find that balance? Because it can be a struggle sometimes.
I think I've been struggling the last 6 months with that. And I just being completely open about
it. Yeah, that's real.
I'm very hard on myself.
Same.
And I'm hard on myself because I know that I'm capable.
Yeah.
And like I've talked about it before with other people, and me and you've had this conversation about when I moved to Atlanta, you know, mm-hmm. I came here with nothing and I've created a life for myself.
Yeah.
But people be like, well, how were you able to do that? And again, I'm not a Christian. I don't believe in like a God. Mm-hmm. So it was like, well, how did you do that? You know, most people like ride on hope and like this one. And I rode on like, I believe in myself. I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard, but I could do it. Right. So it takes a certain like level of like self-awareness to be able to be like, I can do this thing. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm hard on myself because I know that I am capable and that there's no reason why I can't do certain things.
Yeah.
I don't give myself. And I, it's one thing that I started speaking like 2 years ago, and I try to like do it. Give yourself the same love and the same grace that you give everybody else.
Yeah.
And I've been working on that, but that can be very dangerous because you give yourself too much grace. Uh-huh. And I think the thing is between finding the difference is saying, okay, showing up. So my best friend, you've met her, is LGBT. She's a lesbian, right? So she's a part of the LGBTQIA community.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, he said, one of the things that I love, it's crazy when you hear people tell you about you don't realize are things about yourself.
Uh-huh.
He said, one of the reasons why I love you and I love our relationship is because you take me for who I am that day. Yeah. And I can come and I can be this whole different person. And you're just like, okay, so who is she? How are we doing this? But yeah, you know, whatever. And I was like, I don't do that to myself. Allow myself to be who I am that day. And I think that's what I've been kind of focusing on the last, I'm gonna say like week and a half, 2 weeks, is I said, because the last 6 months have been rough, is okay, this is the life I want. These are the things that I want to do. How do I do this? And I set a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And certain things are, this needs to happen in order for this goal to be reached and for my life to look this way. And again, that looks different for each person.
Yeah.
So in order look this way, I have to do these things in order for me to be able to progress and to become this person. And I create a plan. I create the plan, and part of my plan is like I work out probably 6 days a week now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because when I work out, I feel good. It gives me certain chemicals. It's like it's one of the ways to I focus my mind. I'm able to like zone in. I get runner. We talked about I get runner's high now because
what? So you are a runner. She's a runner. She's a track star. Listen, because I haven't reached it.
But all a runner high is like you go into this phase to where your mental overpowers your physical body.
Okay.
That it's like a form of meditation. It doesn't happen all the time. It's not something that you can like get, but it's like as you're running, and it's really weird because my gym, there's a mirror. So as I'm running, I'm looking at myself. So I go into like, it hits a point to where the music is on. So you're drowning out everything around you, mm-hmm. and you're running. you're able, like, I'm able to, like, process and think about all these different things that are, like, going on in my head and going on in my life. And in those things, I made it to where, you know, I have to work out. I work out, I'm doing 2 days, so I have to work out twice a day, this. But also then I give myself grace and sense of, I worked out for 3 hours yesterday, which I ended up doing somehow another day. I worked out for 3 hours today, so I only have to work out once today.
Yeah.
Because my body's sore, because I'm hurting. Okay. So instead of, you know, maybe going and running today and, like, getting on the bike and doing weights, I'm going to do yoga.
Yeah.
So still moving towards my goal, but also giving myself and my body grace, because your body will speak to you. Your mind will speak to you, like, your spirit speaks to you. And it's like the balance is knowing, like, okay, we are in this physical realm. We have to live, like, we have to serve certain society, like, norms and these type of things, but also giving yourself the space to grow and develop and become who you want to be.
Yeah.
And the big balance between the two is who you are, who you want to be, and the gap in between it. And typically the gap isn't really that far. We right. see it as being what it really is. And it's sticking to what you say you're going to do,
mm-hmm.
and having that commitment and having that, what is it? It's not determination. What is the word I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Consistency. It's really consistency.
Yep.
Eric Thomas, I always watch Eric, that this video, How Bad Do You Want It? If you've never watched that video on YouTube, you should go watch it. It's like, how bad do you want it? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you have his, like, one of the things is, like, some of y'all love sleep more than you love success. And not saying you shouldn't sleep, because you should absolutely sleep. But I'm like, sometimes it's gonna take doing what you don't want to do in order to get to what the results that you want. But also rewarding yourself through the process.
Yeah.
So the combination of, like, the balance of it all is listening, progressing, and also having that grace.
Mm-hmm.
But pushing yourself, like, because in order to reach the next level, you got to push yourself harder than you pushed before, but also having this self-confidence that, okay, where I am now is not where I was 2 years ago, where I was 6 months ago, and
right.
I didn't know how this was possible. Mm-hmm. And I think the part of that is stop, and this is probably, okay, so I'm almost done, I promise. I think that helps me be able to do those things is I was, again, Christian, and I went to being atheist, and then I went to being agnostic, and now I just don't label it at all because I don't really care. Okay. Two, I let go of the why. Like, I let go of the, well, why is this and why is that? And I let go of the how.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, how is this going to happen? How is this? How is this? How is this? Like, I let that go, and I just, like, live in, like, this is what I want. And this is what I'm going to get. And I let go of the how and the why, because the thing about it is, when you let those things go, you allow for other things to play, and you allow yourself to see other opportunities that you might not have saw if you had been just so zoned in on. Well, because when you usually think how or why, you have a certain expectation of what certain things are supposed to look like.
That's true. Yeah.
And when you let those things go, and you're just like, it's going to happen because I'm putting in the work. Because even in Christianity, you know, like, what's it? Faith without work, you have to put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
Put in that work, give yourself grace, stay committed to what you say and who you say you are, and everything, it will play itself out. And know when to go harder and know when to, like, take a break. And yeah. Those are the biggest things. It's just like, it's a constant balancing. Life throws things at you, and it's being able to, like, look at yourself and be like, okay, yeah, this ain't it. And just knowing, like, okay, this is it, this ain't it. How do we move around? I'm happy, I'm not happy, I'm content, I'm not content.
Yeah.
And move within those spaces, because what works for me does not work for you.
Yeah.
But also understanding, like, okay, I think, you know, overall we're pretty successful, great, phenomenal Black women,
mm-hmm.
and we're moving through life completely different, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes to all of that. And I love that you acknowledge that, yeah, I'm gonna go hard when I need to go hard. Like, I'm gonna do that. And I think some people get caught up in that, like, I'm just gonna hustle and grind, but then they lose the aspect of, like, okay, let me extend grace to myself. Let me reward myself. Let me actually take a break, because that's needed too. Sleep is important. Rest is important. And like I said earlier, it's finding that balance.
Yep.
It's finding that balance and taking care of yourself wholly so you can be
whole. Yep.
Holy, so you can be whole. Yeah. don't have nothing else to say after that because that was good. If you are ready, I'm ready to get my rapid fire questions.
Okay, let's go.
Ask them first thing off the top of your head. Don't overthink it. You got it?
All right, we're going to try.
Okay. First one, sweet or salty?
Salty.
Yes, ma'am. Number two, if you had a warning label, what would it say?
Ooh, if you don't want the truth, don't ask the question.
That's me. I'm like, I literally will ask my friends, okay, do you want my honest answer or you want to hear what you want to hear? Because listen, you may not like it. Yes. Number three, what makes you cry?
How do I put this in words? When I look at the world and I see the lack of empathy that people have towards one another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Number four, what is something weird that you recommend everyone tries once?
Take nudes.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. Look at your body. I'm always telling people, one of the greatest things before I moved into my own apartment, one thing that I was like prepared for is to be able to walk around naked.
Yeah, walk around naked, sleep naked. Because,
yes, like
and you can say you love yourself if you're always covered. Like
right, and you don't look at your body, and it doesn't have to be sexual. We all have bodies. Yeah, I like that. Number five, if you could pick a superpower, what would yours be?
Ooh, girl, this is so easy. I would be able to transport from place to place because I'm always late and I hate driving.
Everybody this season almost said transportation. Yeah, I hate driving. One of my success things is to be successful enough to have an assistant / chauffeur because I don't want to drive anywhere. And I don't know where I'm going to be living in 3 to 5 years. I don't want to be adulting, but I don't want to have to drive anywhere.
I've lived in Houston, Miami, and Florida. I mean, Houston, yeah. Miami, Atlanta, all the traffic sucks.
Yeah, all the traffic. Yep. You've been in traffic, around traffic, and just, yeah. Number six, one new thing you learned during quarantine or this pandemic, because coronavirus is still here, and it can be tangible or intangible.
So, Javi actually taught me how to solve a Rubik's Cube.
What? Okay. Yeah. That's a good one. Love it. Number seven, last TV show you binged and loved.
Binge. What was the last one I binged? Oh gosh.
I think I might know what it is because I've been meaning to text you about this.
I'm thinking the last one I watched. Oh, binge. I watched The Winx Club. I watched, what else was the other one? It was like some Sherlock Holmes one. And then I've binge watched Girlfriends too as an adult, and it's a completely different experience.
Completely different. You're like, oh, y'all are not good friends.
Y'all not good friends. Y'all is just as lost as I am. Like,
yep. Like, oh. But to talk about TV shows, you talked about The Nevers.
Yes, that's the one.
Yes, I knew it was.
Okay, we didn't binge it because we were watching it week by week.
I'm currently binging it, and I'm on episode 5, and I was already confused, and now I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but I'm still confused.
Yeah, we can talk about it offline.
Yeah, it's good, though. Okay, it's so good. Number 8, what legacy do you want to leave?
So, I talk about, this is really quick, I talk about, like, when I die, I don't want a funeral, I want a party. Mm-hmm. And I want like people to have this huge party and to like just have these stories. Like I want people to be like, I remember when we did this and we did, you know, like, I just want to like my legacy to be like light. Like I want to be a light to people and to where like they might be sad and they think about something like we did, something I said, and it brings some kind of clarity or some kind of understanding. Like I just want my legacy to be like I spread light despite any darkness that I was going through.
Yeah, I love that. Because one of my favorite sayings, my mom used to always tell me in before I went to school, write on note cards, and I actually want it tattooed on my arm and her handwriting is be light. So yes, be light. I love that. Number 9, favorite quote?
Favorite quote? What is my favorite quote? I can't think of it right now because I'm trying to. I'm going to like bookshare this, but whatever. It's you are enough, you are always enough, and you will always be enough. You have nothing to prove and only to gain. Yeah. Because I grew up feeling like I wasn't good enough. Yeah. So just the constant reminder of like, I am good enough. I don't have anything to prove to anybody. So yeah, that's my favorite quote.
I think a lot of people can relate to like not feeling enough. So I love that. Last question. Blank is your destiny.
Success is the first word that came to my mind.
Hey, then there it is. I love it. There it is. That's my last question. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave with my listeners?
I guess the biggest thing is I know I've talked a lot, but
I love it.
Through a lot, mm-hmm. and I'm able to, when we talk about self-love, having that self-awareness, go to therapy. I would not be the person I am if it wasn't for me going to therapy. Apologize to people. Like, we talk about toxic people being toxic. At some point, you were talking to somebody else.
Yep.
So apologize, and apologize without a but. I think that's the biggest thing. Sometimes people want to hear, like, I'm sorry that I hurt you. You know, even if you didn't mean to, like, I realize I have a very sharp tongue. Sometimes I say, it hurts. That's not what I meant. But it doesn't stop the fact that I hurt you, you know? Yeah. And then I guess the biggest thing is just be light. Like, there's so much stuff going on to where be light, but also be light to yourself, not just to others.
Yes. Oh, well, I thank you so much for lending me your voice and your story. And I hope you have a great rest of your Sunday.
You too. Thanks, Destiny.
Give yourself the same love and grace that you give everyone else. That is one of my many, many takeaways from today's episode with Bria. Like, literally, I could just like go on and on and on because she's just so full of love and light and realness. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Bria. If you want to follow her and get to know her more, you can follow her on Instagram at Bria Janae, and that's BREEYAJNAI. It will also be in the show notes. And if you want to follow me and join our little community, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at A Piece of Destiny. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend or two. I'm not going to take any more breaks this season. And as always, guys, keep chasing your destiny.